Joining us each week through the November elections, journalists Molly Hemingway of The Federalist and Mark Hemingway of The Weekly Standard.
I don't think anybody who's thinking rationally actually thinks that Donald Trump would be good on issues of marriage, abortion, religious freedom.
It's been reported that, you know, one of the few soft spots in Trump's support among Republicans is that of weekly churchgoers.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth, issues, etc. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. There is a Sunday op-ed piece in the New York Times, Why Courts Shouldn't Ignore the Facts About Abortion, writes by Linda Greenhouse, writing for the editorial board of the New York Times. It makes some arguments, some kind of legalish arguments. It also makes some moral arguments, but it spends most of its time talking about the evidence that the court needs to pay attention to and perhaps evidence that needs to be ignore. Joining us to respond to this New York Times op-ed piece, Scott Klusendorf, president of Life Training Institute and author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. Scott, welcome back.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Neither of us are legal experts at all, but I don't think we have to be legal experts to evaluate the moral arguments that are being made in this op-ed piece in the New York Times. But it focuses on evidence. What evidence, in your opinion, must all the courts, all the way up to the Supreme Court, have firmly in the center of their attention when it comes to the abortion issue?
Well, the key piece of evidence that the court refused to look at as far back as Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton was the question of what is the status of the unborn. In fact, Justice Blackmun clearly said in Roe v. Wade, we don't need to resolve the question of when life begins because, after all, there's no consensus among philosophers, theologians, and scientists, yada, yada. Well, how does it follow that because people disagree, there's no right answer? This was a vacuous form of reasoning, and it ignored the fundamental question we have to look at. What is the unborn? And even in this case, when we're looking at this article from Linda Greenhouse, this New York Times op-ed piece, notice in the article, Todd, she assumes abortion is a moral good, that women who aren't near clinics will be denied if the Texas law is upheld, when the very question of whether abortion ought to be seen as a moral good is what we're disputing.
So already there is a morality at work.
Yeah, there is. And she's assuming that abortion is a moral good, that somehow these clinic restrictions are going to shut off from women accessing. But she never deals with the question of why we ought to see abortion as a moral good. She simply assumes it's a moral good.
So how would you frame this before, not as a legal expert again, but how would you frame this before the court to get at that very question itself? Abortion a moral good or not?
If I were debating Linda Greenhouse, or I were standing in front of the court and this were a debate based on the merits of arguments, again, not a legal argument necessarily, but a rational and moral argument, I would say the following. I would say, you know what? I agree with Ms. Greenhouse completely. There should be no restrictions on abortion. It should be legal all 9 months. Let's have no restrictions on where it's performed, how it's done, who does it. No restrictions at all. I agree completely if the unborn are not human. But that's the question they don't want to deal with.
So this isn't really an op-ed piece so much about the rights of women, but about a woman's ability to avail herself of what is already assumed to be an innate good.
Yeah, that's right. But the funny irony here is that she cites the Casey decision as the basis for her argument that there should be no undue restrictions on women who want abortions. And of course, she's arguing the Texas law that's going to be heard Wednesday at the Supreme Court is somehow an undue burden. But the funny thing is, the very court decision she relies on to make this op-ed piece, the Casey decision, undermined a woman's right to abortion. And I'm going to tell you how, Todd. And this is just something that I suppose she just doesn't know. The court in Casey said that at the heart of liberty is the right to define one's own concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life. And it was that mystery passage that I just alluded to that the court used to uphold abortion in Casey. Now, here's the problem with that. If it's true that we make up our own definition about what is life and the mystery and meaning of human life, then a future court could come along and make up women to be creatures who don't have a right to life, don't have a right to an abortion, and there'd be no way for her to argue against what the court just said. So in the very act of citing a Supreme Court to make her case, she ends up citing a decision that at the end of the day really sets the stage to undermine abortion rights.
I wonder if you're concerned about, and you know, there are people of good will on the pro-life side of this Supreme Court case who are arguing it, but their tack is to focus on the damage and the harm done to women in abortion. What are your concerns there?
Well, my concern is that we put the cart before the horse. Our primary argument should always be that abortion is wrong because it intentionally kills an innocent human being. It's okay to talk about the effects on women after you've made your moral case that abortion is the intentional killing of an innocent human being. But you first need to make your argument from science to show that the unborn are human, and then you need to argue from philosophy that there's no relevant difference between that embryo and the adult that would justify killing the former. If you don't start with moral arguments, then what you end up leading with is subjective opinions. For every woman who holds a sign that says, "I regret my abortion," there will be five who show up saying, "I don't regret mine." Now where are we? So instead of leading with stories, leading with subjective experience, we need to lead with facts and arguments that establish the moral position we're arguing, namely that abortion intentionally kills an innocent human being and it's wrong to do that. Then we can talk about the impact on women. I'm all for making it clear to the public that many women feel damaged by abortion. I'm all for letting women who've had abortions make their stories known. I just disagree with pro-lifers who say that's what we ought to lead with.
So your concern there is that the moral basis for abortion as intrinsically evil is assumed.
Yes, that's correct. We've got to make our case that the unborn should not be killed and that we have good reasons for saying that. And if we make that the centerpiece of our apologetic, when we get articles like this one from New York Times writer Linda Greenhouse, we can see the essential flaw in the argument. She simply assumes that abortion is a moral good that poor women and women without access will be denied if somehow the court upholds the Texas law. But nowhere does she argue that abortion is a moral good. She just simply assumes it.
It is remarkable, Scott, how incredibly persuasive that tactic is of assuming out of existence and out of the
exactly
moral consideration the unborn is. It's remarkably, I mean, people of otherwise sound mind and sound moral reasoning can be taken in by this, can't they?
Well, C.S. Lewis said that the most dangerous ideas in the culture are those that we simply assume, not those that are spelled out for everybody to look at. And nowhere is that more true than the abortion debate. I mean, look back to 2 years ago, Barack Obama's celebration of Roe v. Wade on the anniversary of that Supreme Court decision. The president said essentially this, and I'll quote him almost word for word. He was celebrating Roe v. Wade, and he said, "This is a decision we celebrate because this is a nation where everyone gets the right to pursue their own dreams." Now, notice he just assumed that, quote, everyone, unquote, did not include the unborn. He didn't argue for it. He just assumed it. And that's precisely what you're talking about, that dangerous assumption that floats under the radar and no one challenges.
The other thing I think that we need to at least discuss briefly here is that there are some advocates of abortion who will say, you know, okay, abortion, it's not a good thing, but it's a necessary evil. What is your response to that?
Well, first of all, I would say that as soon as you start saying that we ought to tolerate evil, you're doing something that is tolerating evil. These are people looking for an excuse to justify a bad behavior. Now, pro-lifers can look at this and say, look, we may not be able to get rid of all of the evil, so we will get behind, for the moment, bills that don't outlaw all abortion while we work to protect all children. We'll do the best we can to limit the evil done while we work for complete protection for all children. That's very different than someone who settles for evil and says, you know what, we just have to live with this. Reality is reality. Look, slavery was considered a settled thing for hundreds of years. That didn't make it right. So we've got to be committed to those moral principles.
Do you think that the court has, and again, we're approaching this both as legal novices, but do you think that the court, this court, has demonstrated the kind of acumen, moral acumen, to be able to see through these are the arguments that are going to be made Wednesday. These are the arguments.
Yeah.
Do you think they have, especially minus the mind of Antonin
Scalia? I'm not real confident that there's a resounding force of intellectual thought on the court. I mean, it's a mixed bag. You never know what Anthony Kennedy is going to do. I'm almost tempted to say it depends on what side of the bed he wakes up on. It's just that unpredictable with him. And now, with it being possibly 4-4, a split, I don't think the Republicans are going to allow a nominee. At least they better not. If that's true, you're going to end up with a 4-4 split, which means the lower court ruling stands. I don't know. I mean, Judge Roberts could surprise us. He certainly did on Obamacare. So I'm not sure what to do. I almost say flip a coin.
Finally, for you, let's go to the heart of this. Is abortion a moral good?
Well, it's not a moral good when you're intentionally killing an innocent human being. The pro-life argument is not that it's always wrong to kill. It's that it's always wrong to intentionally kill an innocent human being. And that's what abortion does. Therefore, we think it's wrong, not good. So for someone to assume that abortion is a moral good, that certain people will be denied simply because we don't have enough clinics or because there's too many regulations, is to assume the very thing they're trying to prove, namely that abortion is a moral good, but that has to be argued for.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute and author of the book, The Case for Life, Equipping Christians to Engage the Culture. You can purchase this book and find out more about Life Training Institute under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Scott, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. Blessings to you.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we're going to talk about the Oscars last night. The 88th Academy Awards were announced. There were some winners. There were some losers. There was some odd moments. We'll get it all by way of review and walk through some of those films that either in their acting or their directing or the other aspects of their production were recognized by the 88th Academy Awards last night. Pastor Ted Giese will be our guest on this Monday afternoon, February the 29th. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. We'll be talking about a few things. One of the big things that was in view last night, like Pastor Giese's pastoral thoughts on this, was the racism in Hollywood. That's how the Oscars kicked off, and that was pretty much the theme of the night. We'll be right back.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Trinity Lutheran, Brooklyn, New York. Hope Lutheran, Birmingham, Alabama. Our Savior Lutheran, Paradise, California. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. Peace with Christ Lutheran, Fort Collins, Colorado, Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran, Kimberling City, Missouri, The Lutheran Church of Our Savior, Salinas, California, St. John's Lutheran, Algoma, Wisconsin, and St. John's Lutheran, Colton, California. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org and click support. The Issues Etc. 300.